Time now for our Ask an Expert segment, sponsored by Stanford Healthcare. Every weekday at 9:20 here on KCBS, we're working to get answers to your questions about different aspects of the ongoing pandemic. Today, we're going to take a closer look at the long-term effects, maybe you could call them the after effects, of a COVID-19 infection. To answer your questions, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Lakshmi Santosh, founder and physician faculty lead of the Multidisciplinary Post-COVID Optimal Clinic at UC San Francisco Health. Dr. Santosh, good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here and share whatever we know about this new disease.
Well, this is fascinating stuff because what you're doing is treating not the initial cases, not somebody who suddenly develops the fever and the cough and the shortness of breath. These are people who, I guess most of us might say, have recovered. Can you kind of walk us through the genesis of the operation and what you've set up there?
Sure. So I have a unique clinical seat at the table where I work in both the intensive care unit with the sickest of the sick COVID patients and on the regular hospital floors and in the outpatient clinic setting. So I've really seen a full range or a full spectrum of patients with COVID-19. Early on in the pandemic, when this was first starting up, our faculty group in pulmonary, that's my main area of expertise, pulmonary and intensive care unit medicine, our faculty group said, we got to start a service to help folks who are recovering from this illness and bring up to speed what we can do to help in multiple ways. So what we did is we set up this multidisciplinary clinic, just as you mentioned, where we're really harnessing the expertise, not only from our pulmonary faculty, our lung-specified faculty, but also we partner with psychiatry, mental health, geriatrics, neurology, cardiology, integrative medicine, rehab, and more, just to try to give the best care to our patients recovering from COVID-19. What is the model of this clinic? What have we based it on? You know, I didn't invent this concept. This is really a well-studied or well-established model on people who have recovered from critical illness, from really severe illness. And that model is called post-intensive care syndrome or PIC syndrome. And around the country, there's actually a lot of clinics focusing on this where they really focus on a couple of different domains of people's health. And the four big domains that we focus on in our clinic, anchored in that kind of framework, are pulmonary or lung function, physical functioning, mental health functioning, and cognitive functioning. And so what we do is we kind of take a structured approach to really explore how people are doing in all those four domains through their recovery process and see what services we can connect people to get the help that they need.
Now, are all of the people you've seen through the clinic people who came through an intensive care unit experience?
That's a really good question. So we see people who are hospitalized either in the intensive care unit or in the regular hospital, not in the intensive care unit, as well as we see people who were not hospitalized but who have persistent lung symptoms, persistent pulmonary symptoms. So that's the population that we're focusing on in our clinic. And you might see that there's clinics around the country, all with different areas of focus. Some will only focus on that ICU population. Some will only focus on, but we have a little bit of a broader focus where we focus on people who are hospitalized in the ICU, outside of the ICU, or people who weren't hospitalized but are still having these lung issues.
Okay. Well, we have a number of questions lined up here. I think this topic interests a lot of people. And sadly, there are people who probably need more help than they've gotten through through the process. So the questions come into our email box at askus@kcbsradio.com. And let's see if we can start tackling them. First of all, here's a simple one. What percentage of COVID-19 patients wind up with these long-term symptoms?
That's a really good question. And as you know, we're still learning about this illness. I'll tell you what's been published so far, which does kind of jive with our local experience. What's been published so far is basically a large case series out of Italy, which was one of the early epicenters. And that found that over 50% had people with persistent symptoms. The most common big three persistent symptoms to look out for were fatigue, chest pain, and shortness of breath. And that kind of drives with our local experience where we've seen a lot of people who've recovered from the acute, you know, sudden onset illness, but are still left with these persistent symptoms. This is pretty similar in some ways to people who've recovered from a serious life-threatening pneumonia from another cause. Of course, we know that there's some differences, some key differences that are kind of COVID-specific, but some of those persistent symptoms that can happen after recovery from an acute illness are similar with another kind of other kinds of severe pneumonias. So we're seeing some differences and some similarities between, you know, similar pneumonias from other causes.
All right. Next question. I have a family history of heart issues. I've heard there's a belief that COVID survivors will suffer from long-lasting cardiac damage and cardiovascular problems. How much of a risk am I at? How much worse could it make it if I get the virus?
This is a really good question. And, you know, in my practice as a lung doctor, I see a lot of people with heart issues, lung issues, or both who ask me a variant of these questions. And what I tell them is this. Of course, we're still learning about some of the after effects, but we do know that people with heart issues and lung issues, as well as other risk factors, say diabetes, being obese, being overweight, having other chronic health conditions, can unfortunately place people at higher risk. There's also people who have been, like I said, young and healthy, you know, hikers, skiers, marathoners, who've also been at risk for complications thereafter. So it's really hard to predict. What I tell people is, if you're healthy and young, don't have an invincibility complex about yourself, that, you know, this virus is unpredictable. We don't know in advance who's going to develop kind of long-term symptoms and who's going to escape with just an asymptomatic case or a super mild case. It's not limited just to people with heart disease or lung disease or older folks. I think that's a common myth. It can affect anybody. And so I tell people to take kind of universal precautions, which is wear a mask anytime you're outside, or if you're inside with other people that are not in your immediate family unit, you know, try to maintain that physical distancing of at least 6 feet of space, and take all the usual precautions, because it's hard to predict who's going to be impacted. For a lot of these questions and for a lot of the readers, the people who submitted questions, I can hear these really good questions, and I can hear, you know, the pain and suffering and worry behind these anonymous questions. And I just wanted to say that, you know, I hear you and I see you, and the medical community is still learning a ton about this new disease. And a lot of science can seem like kind of shades of gray answers and not really black and white, which is totally frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I'll acknowledge up front that the uncertainty surrounding this condition is really, really hard for folks. And I get that and appreciate that. So a lot of the answers to the questions today, I'll say up front, might be, we don't know yet, but researchers at UCSF and across the country and world are really working at a breakneck pace to figure it out. I hope that helps.
It has been a heartening thing to sit where I sit. We've done over 100 of these episodes and talked to people like yourself and realize the incredibly frantic work that's being done, you know, day and night to try to get answers to something that we didn't even know about, what, 8 months ago.
Exactly.
This next one kind of goes down that road, Doctor. I got COVID-19 in late February. It's been one medical roadblock after another. First, I was told I couldn't have COVID-19 because I hadn't been to China. They wouldn't test me. And then when I came back for help with lingering symptoms, I was told I was just anxious. I've had headaches, breathing issues, pain all over, cognitive problems, 6 months now. Now they tell me they're sorry, but there's nothing they can do for me because they don't know what's happening to people like me. I guess the specifics here, are there tests I should have? What can I do? I feel very let down by my health providers.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I want to tell the reader, the writer, the listener, that you're not alone, that this is a common scenario that we're seeing where people who couldn't get access to testing early on in the pandemic and who had symptoms that were consistent are having some of these lingering, persistent effects. And I'm sorry that you're experiencing this. And I'm sorry that some members of the medical community are not as up to speed with the long-term effects of this virus and this condition. So I hear you and I see you. One of the questions that I commonly get that you're asking is, you know, is it helpful to get a blood test or an antibody test to look at if I did in fact have the virus back in February? I would recommend a hold off for now, because the antibody tests that we still have, unfortunately, this late in the game, are still quite imperfect. I've seen people who were super sick in the ICU with what definitely was COVID-19, and their antibody test was negative, which is clearly a false negative. It made us chuckle when we saw it. And similarly, I've seen people have false positive tests too. So because the antibody tests are not quite reliable yet, I would say that it's not, it may not be helpful to try to hunt down to try to get an antibody test until we have better ones available. What can you do right now? I think one thing that you can do is, if you're in the San Francisco area, or if you're in an area with another academic medical center, is try to get a referral from your primary care to a clinic like ours that does offer this multidisciplinary support. These are springing up all over the country and often will help people get plugged into the resources that they need and to experts who have just seen a lot of patients in your situation, in this situation. So you are not alone. I believe you and believe your symptoms. And I think that there is our multidisciplinary team, both here and at other medical centers like UCLA, UCSD, Stanford, and across the country, are setting up these clinics to try to help folks just like you.
I guess it kind of begs the question. This sort of feels like maybe an episode of House that never got made, but is it easy to know by examining someone, based on especially what you just said about the antibody test, whether someone is suffering from the after effects of COVID if it was never proved with a test at the time, or something else?
It's a really good question. I would say that for some cases, it's classic. People are coming in with the classic symptoms saying, I had what seemed like an exposure. Somebody was sick at work. Then I developed the classic symptoms, right? Loss of smell, taste, fever, chills, muscle ache, shortness of breath, a dry cough, diarrhea. Those are some of the classic symptoms up front. You're right, though, that some other illnesses, you know, I also want to be careful or wary of, you know, how do they say it? What's that expression? For every nail, it's not a hammer, or something like that.
Right,
you get what
right.
I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
You know, if you're experiencing some medical symptoms, don't necessarily assume, oh gosh, this has got to be COVID, and do get checked out for your symptoms, because a lot of things, you know, as Dr. House will tell you, will present with similar symptoms. And so collectively, both as a medical community and as a patient community, we shouldn't have anchoring bias, as we call it, on COVID. Because not all symptoms might be COVID or COVID-related. And we see that a lot, actually, in people who are recovering from COVID, too, where I tell people, you know, if you feel symptoms that are new or unusual, you're still in the right age group for other illnesses, right? And so I tell people, if you feel something unusual for your body or new symptoms, don't assume that this is necessarily a lingering effect from COVID. Do get checked out, get medical attention, because, you know, people are at risk for all sorts of things. So there's the phrase, right, Occam's razor, which mm-hmm. means there's one simple explanation that will unify all. But in the medical community, we also have a phrase called Hickam's dictum, which means that people can have as many diseases as they please. And what that warning is, to just make sure to not assume that everything is related to COVID, and do get checked out if you have new symptoms that are puzzling that you haven't had before.
To distill it to another simple phrase, it's complicated, right?
Okay. That is absolutely right.
Okay. Next question. College football has been canceled or postponed at many campuses because of fears that players who get the virus could develop myocarditis, heart complications later. Can you explain the concern? Have you seen this at all? Is it treatable?
It's a good question. So I'll say that early on in the pandemic, early reports out of China actually showed a lot of myocarditis, which means inflammation around the heart. And that could have made people susceptible to heart rhythm issues, heart pump failure, things like that. As more and more autopsy studies or cardiac studies have been done, we've seen a variety of results. So some studies have showed that people with heart symptoms have had things like abnormal heart MRIs or other testing, whereas some studies have actually shown that the inflammation in the heart has actually been quite low and not too bad. So we're still learning about this. I think that, you know, sports being canceled collectively is hard, of course, for our national psyche. It's a pastime. It's a great escape that we all enjoy. However, I think it's actually important from the infection control perspective, especially when you have people coming from all over the country, gathering in a place, relatively close contact sports like football makes it tricky. So I know that, you know, maybe that myocarditis explanation was just one of the many explanations that caused people to take a pause on sports and other, you know, close contact recreational activities like that. Personally, I will say that a lot of our reports that we're seeing, both published in literature and in our clinical experience at UCSF, is that a lot of people will have, like I mentioned, chest pain that happens for the long term, you know, that persists after people are sick. However, fortunately, a lot of their cardiac testing or lung testing actually is normal. So that's some good news, bad news, right? We're relieved that a lot of these studies that are coming out are showing actually a lot of normal testing. And of course, we're worried that people still have symptoms. So we want to be able to treat those and treat people and also reassure people when we get normal testing saying, oh, hey, this is actually good news. Okay. There are research studies available at UCSF and elsewhere. One of the studies that we collaborate with actually helps people who have recovered from COVID-19 but are still having an abnormal heartbeat or palpitations get actually a continuous heart rhythm monitoring strip for about a two-week period and send that back so that we can see actually what is the impact of COVID-19 on the heart. So I would say the TLDR, long story short, is that myocarditis, we saw it a little bit earlier on in the pandemic, haven't seen it as much more these days. A lot of people are having normal cardiac testing. However, it's still an active area of study.
Okay. A couple of versions of this same one, so let me just sort of synthesize here. What about someone's overall personal health before they catch COVID-19? Any impact on how it plays out after recovery? Does someone in relatively good health have fewer long-term concerns?
Well, that is a really good question. And unfortunately, it's a bit difficult to predict. So like I mentioned, I've seen young and healthy people have really bad symptoms afterwards. I've also seen people recover from an intensive care unit stay, come to me in clinic and say, I don't remember you, but I'm feeling fine now. And I am so heartened. We're heartened to see that, to say, wow, you were really, really sick and you're fine now. So there's a full spectrum of recovery, ranging from a complete recovery to these long-term persistent symptoms, you know, as colloquially has been called the long haulers or long COVID. And we're still studying, what is it about people's immune response? What is it about people's body's inflammation response that might cause people to react differently to this virus? And so that's a very active area of study that our scientists are working on to get more answers on that. For now, I would say act as if everyone around you might be an asymptomatic carrier, right? And so that's why the things like universal masking, washing your hands, keeping your distance are good, because you don't know in advance that, oh gosh, you know, if I get this, I'll be fine afterwards, because it's not necessarily true. Of course, people who already have heart or lung issues or who are of older age or who have lots of medical problems, of course, I'm more worried about those folks getting complications. However, young people aren't, you know, immune to these either. And I've seen cases of young, healthy people get really sick too. So as of now, it's hard to predict. Be safe, keep your distance, wear a mask. Those are the kind of the best things we can do.
Okay. Got a couple more for you. This one here, you mentioned mental health issues. This question says, have you seen any concern with survivor's guilt?
It's a really good question. I think we've seen a lot of mental health issues related to COVID-19. And it's completely understandable. We've seen people with anxiety, depression, as well as some PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder type symptoms. Survivor's guilt is a really, really sad and good question. I think that one of the saddest or tragic, most tragic things that we've seen is that sometimes some families get afflicted particularly hard. So we've had cases where people, you know, both partners in a couple are affected. We've had cases where an entire family with multiple generations has been affected. And absolutely, survivor's guilt is a real thing where you've had multiple family members affected or a partner affected. And if one person tragically doesn't make it or has severe complications, I think that's why it's really important to get multidisciplinary care. We have, you know, a routine mental health evaluation of folks because we know that sometimes being in the hospital itself in the era of COVID can be kind of a traumatic experience. It can be a healthcare trauma. And especially when people are coming in with, we have to wear so many layers of our personal protective equipment, our masks, our goggles, our gowns and gloves. It's hard to see people's faces through all that gear, and that can be a traumatic experience for folks. So definitely the mental health impact is a profound one. Also with the hospitals restricting visitation policies, it makes it really hard for people to have their social support. And then, you know, of course, in pandemic times, too, we're all experiencing a little bit of a loss of things that are normal coping mechanisms to us. So I will say for that, you know, the long story short is it's okay to not be okay and get help. for mental health symptoms, including things like survivor's guilt, anxiety, PTSD, or depression.
Okay, let's slip in one more last quick one, then I'll let you go. And this one wants to know if someone with an asymptomatic case of COVID might still develop these health impacts downstream.
It's a really good question, one that is being studied actively. Overall, the asymptomatic people don't even know that they had it and should be relatively spared or unaffected. There are some studies looking at maybe early signs of some heart or lung issues in people who had it and who are asymptomatic. It's a small signal that we're closely monitoring. Overall, though, the asymptomatic folks have been relatively okay, but we are still worried and closely monitoring for that. People who have any persistent symptoms, there's been some small research studies looking at some heart or lung issues after asymptomatic infection, but the vast majority of research hasn't really supported that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the time this morning. Great answers to, I know, a lot of gnawing questions that people have, and we just wish you the best in keeping up the work there.
I really appreciate the opportunity, and thanks again.
All right. That's Dr. Lakshmi Santosh. She's the founder and physician faculty lead of the multidisciplinary post-COVID clinic called Optimal, which is run out of UCSF Health.